a death trap, a war zone, chaotic and unprecedented. Just some of the descriptions of the emergency department at University Hospital Limerick made this week during an inquest into the death of 16-year-old Aoife Johnston. The teenage girl attended the emergency department on December 17, 2022, suffering from an acute infection of sepsis with her symptoms worsening. The ED was overcrowded and understaffed, and Aoife didn't get the treatment she needed in time. She died on the 19th of December at 3:30 in the afternoon. The details of her death highlight a litany of failures at the hospital, which, according to one consultant, was a death trap on the night and is still a death trap today. Well, we're joined in the studio now by the Chief Executive of the Health Service, Executive Bernard Gloucester. Good afternoon and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Justin.
The details of Aoife Johnston's death, they're chilling, distressing, they're horrific. Her family did everything right on the day, bringing her somewhere where they thought that she would get help, and she didn't get that help in time. What do you, as head of the HSE, say to the Johnston family today now, having heard all of the distressing details of her death at that inquest this week?
And it is truly distressing, Justin. And the last time I was here with you, having received the systems analysis report, while I did apologise to them, I hadn't at that stage the benefit of meeting with them, which I subsequently did. And I met with James and Carol, and I'm very grateful to them in the midst of all their tragedy for affording me that privilege. And to them and to their family and to Aoife's sisters. And I think everybody will be struck by Megan's very public expression of grief and trauma last Thursday. To them today, on behalf of the Health Service, there is only one thing we can say to them, and that is that we apologise, we are sorry, we failed Aoife, our failure led to her death, and we failed them as a family.
And apologies are one thing, but what about accountability? Has anybody been held to account for the mistakes that were made that night, which led to Aoife's death?
So as you're aware, there's a couple of parts to reviewing Aoife's case and the issues that arise from it. I've had the systems analysis report in December. I took the very unusual step of appointing the former Chief Justice Frank Clark to assist me with a very complex matter. I now have and will study very carefully over the next few days all of the transcripts of the inquest. And putting the systems analysis together, the inquest and Frank Clark's report to me, together with all of the information I have, which is much wider than perhaps what most people would have, the accountability question remains very much alive for me, but it's not one I can preempt or determine until I finish that process.
Do you have Frank Clark's report before you know?
No.
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 So you're waiting on that. And after you have that and you put together all of that information, you say that the issue of accountability is one that's alive. Are you determined then to take action to ensure that there is accountability for the mistakes that were made that night?
When I was last with you about this case, Justin, I think I used the phrase appropriate justice for what has happened in Aoife's case. And appropriate justice means it is appropriate, it is fair. There are no findings against any individuals. But the question of accountability will be addressed by me. It will be addressed by me alone and without fear or favour.
During that inquest, Dr. James Gray said the emergency department in Limerick was a death trap on the night and is still a death trap today. Do you accept that?
So can I separate two parts of Dr. Gray's and indeed everybody else's evidence in relation to people's descriptions of the department on the night and that weekend? I'm not going to either question, second guess that in any way, or take from the finding of the coroner, which I fully accept, which was medical misadventure in a very particular context of overcrowding and other issues. In relation to Dr. Gray's description today, I do have to be fair to everybody, address the fact, and I have this as recently as Friday, the department is much more safe now, despite the fact it still has overcrowding. It is much more safe, and I can go through any of the steps that evidence that if you wish, but just for example, the number of junior doctors in the emergency department since Aoife died has gone from 26 to 47, the number of emergency consultants from 10 to 15, the nurse staffing levels increased not only to safe staffing levels but also indeed to account for additional nursing for people who are boarded patients, as we call them in the department, and many other steps have been taken to improve safety So I would take issue with the description of it today.
But we have other doctors in the Limerick area who fear for the patients that they're sending into Limerick. Dr. Yvonne Williams in Shannon told Morning Ireland this week that the emergency department was unsafe in 2022 and remains unsafe today. That's what the doctors in the area are saying. Are you telling us today that the ED is safe, despite the fact that we have 100 people on trolleys there regularly?
So again, and not getting into disputing numbers, when we have people on trolleys in any hospital in Ireland, that's a patient safety issue for us. And our job is first and foremost to absolutely mitigate that risk down to the best degree possible. Making it 100% guaranteed safe is perhaps a different thing, and I'm not sure there's too many people could say that about many hospitals. What I am saying today, and I said this 3 weeks ago, I'm satisfied that if people need emergency care, they should and could attend that department today. But I do understand, and in fairness to Yvonne, I did hear her interview, I do understand the concern that people have. And against the backdrop of the very traumatic week that the public experience, I do have to say our job is to work to build people's confidence and safety assurance
but
in the hospital.
Are you saying to GPs like Dr. Williams, who say that they're sending their patients who need tests to Dublin or Cork or Galway rather than go to Limerick, because if they send them to Limerick, those patients are angry at them for having been sent there? Are you saying that it's the wrong decision to be sending them to other hospitals?
I would be very happy to talk to Yvonne and her colleagues. What I guess is I have to trust that practitioners, when they meet their patients, give their patients the best advice possible. I can't insist that people have a particular view or not. I wouldn't ever say somebody was wrong for making a decision about their own healthcare or a doctor about somebody's healthcare. What I am saying is the emergency department in Limerick and the hospital, and remember the problem is much wider than the emergency department, I'm satisfied if people need to go to hospital today. They should do that and should of course take the advice of their GP along that journey.
And yet we have people like Nolene Moore, and a campaigner in the area, who says that people are living in fear of having to attend the ED in Limerick and that they would rather die at home than go there. What do you say to those people?
I say that indicates the scale of the challenge that rests with the health community in Limerick and the Midwest. Everybody working in that hospital today and in that hospital group, and everybody working in the health service and in primary care in the Midwest, has a role to play in rebuilding the public confidence and in ensuring that we are honest with people about the pressures we have. And we have pressures, but since Aoife's death alone, the very significant safety indicators that were obvious then, a substantial amount of those have been addressed in a way that does make the department more safe.
But a key problem here is capacity.
Completely.
The ED is habitually, regularly overcrowded.
It is.
Now, there are two 96-bed units being planned, being built. The first is under construction. It won't be built until next year, I think. The second unit won't be built for about four more years, and correct me if I'm wrong. So we'll have 96 beds open next year, but only about half of those are new beds. The other half are replacement beds. So just 48 new beds next year, when you have doctors and clinicians saying what you need is around 300 new beds.
And I've reassessed that position with my new regional executive officer there, who controls the whole health service for the Midwest, Sandra Broderick. I've had very lengthy discussions with the minister. The minister and I spent a very long day in Limerick, and indeed the night before, visiting the emergency department. The first block to come on stream in the first quarter of next year is 96 beds. We've changed the profile of that now, so 71 of those are new and 25 are replacement, as opposed to 48.
How have you done that? By opening other beds in the hospital?
No, what we will do is we had planned to take 48 beds in the existing hospital out of commission because they're very old infrastructure. We're now going to keep half of those because the crisis. Block B will come on, I estimate, in 2027. For the Block A that's coming on at the start of next year, the Minister has already given sanction and approval to commence the recruitment for that now this year to make it better. We've also now introduced 70 step-down sub-acute ICU beds, 50 in Nina, 20 in Ennis, which will be in the direct control of the group. I'm hoping to drop a modular build block of another 18 beds onto the site before next Christmas, and we're extending the acute medical assessment unit. They are all interventions that recognise that, yes, capacity is a challenge in Limerick, and capacity together with process and reform is what's required.
But that doesn't get you anywhere near the 300 beds that the doctors in the hospital say are needed.
Well, the 296 bed blocks plus the interim measures certainly takes you a lot closer to what a Model 4 type system would have. And I think the Minister is shortly due indeed to confirm the capital programme for the next coming period. And within that, indeed, I'm hoping there will be further indications of support in the Midwest. So there's no question, Justin, of us not recognising capacity as a challenge. But I am saying that with capacity also comes the requirement for multiple changes at multiple levels. Otherwise, all of the capacity in the world will make no difference.
Why have you not opened the minor injury clinics in Nina, Ennis and St John's on a 24-hour basis? I think two of them close at 8 o'clock in the evening and a third at 7 o'clock in the evening. Why are they not open 24 hours a day to take pressure off the ED in Limerick?
So firstly, nationally, last year 165,000 people attended injury units out of the 1.7 million people seeking emergency care, and that's a very good thing. Ennis has now built up, I think, to a level of confidence. We have submitted a plan which the Minister and I have to discuss in the coming week to bring to a level standard the opening hours across the country of all injury units, and to add the number of injury units to give capacity in other regions, because it's not just the Midwest. If the evidence is there and if the staffing capability is there to extend the local injury units, there's no question but that any proposal from the hospital to me would be considered. But I do, I do have to allow the hospital to determine a scale of priorities, because if you staff one option, you have to consider what other option you can staff immediately because of the available workforce.
OK, but when you say you're going to discuss that plan to open Ennis, to extend the opening hours at Ennis, what you're talking about there is you're going to discuss the financial resources for that with the Minister, isn't it? That you're going to need more money to do that, to hire the staff to work there, is that it?
So last week the Minister approved 2,268 new jobs as part of the service plan for 2024, and included in that is provision to expand injury units right across the country. It is the one option in the health service that the Minister has been personally, pushing us to do. But however, my regional management team in the Midwest told me that the first step was to extend the acute medical assessment units, to let the injury units continue to grow. But there won't be any shortage of support whatsoever for the Midwest. In fact, the level of support for the Midwest over the last 4 years far outstrips that of other regions.
Are you giving any consideration to revisiting the decision of the HSE to close the emergency departments at Ennis, Nina and St John's? Are you giving any consideration to reinstating full emergency department status at those hospitals?
And that would require me to simply get out of this studio today to raise a level of expectation that's not appropriate. An emergency department in any of those hospitals requires those hospitals to then also have critical care, to have access to emergency surgery and so on. What I'm saying is the clinical advice available to me and the best option available to me at the moment is to build the capacity in Limerick, to build further capacity for support systems in Nina and Ennis. But what I have asked every one of the six new regional executives who report directly to me now, I've asked them all to look at the span of health services that are in their region and what the best model and approach for the future is. And within that context, we will, of course, look at how we best pursue options. But right now, today, the clinical advice is that, in fact, to give anyone the view that we could simply do something like reverse those decisions from 15 years ago would in fact not be a safe decision.
The INMO said last month that there are 200 nursing post vacancies in Limerick and 21 of those are in the emergency department. They point out that the recruitment moratorium is having a detrimental impact on the ability to staff that hospital properly. Is that true?
I have no doubt the recruitment moratorium will affect individual wards, individual services, individual health centres, no different to Limerick or any parts of the country. But I do, in case people think that the place is absolutely running so short of staff, just since Aoife died, in the month that Aoife died, there were 5,222 whole-time equivalents in the University of Limerick Hospital Group. Right now, today, despite a moratorium, there are 5,805. There are people in on the payroll and working. In nursing, to answer the INMO's question, nursing and midwifery in that group now is at 2,299, 2,300 people. There's 2,010 of them at work today. There's about 250 vacancies.
How many clinical posts remain unfilled in Limerick?
So about, in certainly in nursing and midwifery, about 150 permanent vacancies are there. All of the vacancies in emergency medicine, critical care and maternity are approved and derogated to be filled from the pause. And the other vacancies are the normal vacancies you would have that arise from maternity leave and so on. And they're mitigated by a continued significant use of agency staffing and overtime.
Okay, but when you have a hospital that is on its knees with overcrowding and you have 150 nursing vacancies in that hospital, isn't it time to make a special case then for Limerick to lift the recruitment moratorium so that you can hire those staff?
That's against the backdrop of the total number that they have, and I also have to be fair to other hospitals. What I can say to you is this: there is a derogation in place for emergency medicine. There's been a substantial increase in nursing in the emergency department since Aoife's death. There is a derogation in place for critical care. There's a derogation in place for maternity care. And I have given my regional executive officers latitude to come back to me with any particular risk that they have. Any vacancy that's in University Hospital Limerick today is not just a straight vacancy that nobody's in. There's significant dependencies and use of agency and overtime. So every lever that can be pulled, Justin, is being pulled. And I can assure you Limerick is not short of my support and my personal attention in that.
Bernard Gloucester, Chief Executive of the HSE, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us today. We're back with more after this break.